In tonight's conclusion of the Undertaker Wrestling Nostalgia miniseries we've been doing, I'm going to be covering The Undertaker's top three moments ever in WWE, just in time for Survivor Series this Sunday to celebrate The Undertaker's 30th anniversary in WWE. So this is going to be a ton of fun. Let's get everything started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for this wrestling nostalgia version of the show as we conclude with the Undertaker's miniseries that we did for and in tribute to the Undertaker's 30th anniversary of debuting in WWE. 30 years. That's the majority of my life. I was 5 years old when this guy debuted in WWE. Kindergarten. I was in kindergarten when this man debuted in WWE. And yes, he has not been on a full-time schedule for quite a long time. But as if you watch the documentary series that WWE put together with The Last Ride, you got more of a feel for the, and more respect for the man behind the dead man, because you understood that it wasn't just wrestling once a year. That actually can be a lot harder on the body than just wrestling multiple times a year. So while we all said, oh, Undertaker's going to come in, he's going to do his thing at WrestleMania, and we won't see him till next year's WrestleMania, that was the case for a lot of years. But I think we underestimated just how much went into that year of repair and mentally seeing where he's at, who he may want to face. Maybe he's done, maybe he's not. And then getting his body into shape at 40-some, 50-some years old is just, it's a very tall task. And I think we all should tip our caps, so to speak, to this man who gave everything that he had for this business. Everything. And now it is time to say a final farewell at Survivor Series, but I have my doubts, and I think that you may know where I'm headed with that. It very well may be, and it would be a suiting, very fitting, poetic end to The Undertaker, his character, if he were to truly, for real, no jokes, no coming back, a true retirement, a true goodbye at Survivor Series. It still could happen. I think it still could happen. Again, it would be very fitting. It would be a nice round 30. He would conclude and end where he started. He could come out. Maybe he comes out with Brother Love. Maybe Bruce Pritchard puts on the red face makeup and he comes out with Bruce Pritchard, with Brother Love. I mean, who knows? But I tend to believe that Undertaker is going to come out and cut a promo kind of as Undertaker, kind of as American Badass, and kind of as Mark Calloway. I think it's what we saw at WrestleMania 36 this past year in the Boneyard match with AJ Styles. He was all three in one. So I think that's the version of the dead man that we're going to get this Sunday. Now I'm going to be very honest with you. It's going to be critical, absolutely critical, where The Undertaker is placed on the card. Meaning, if he comes out at the beginning of the show versus the middle of the show versus the end of the show, will dictate how or what could happen from this moment. What I mean by that is, if Undertaker comes out at the beginning of the show or in the middle of the show, it could truly be a final farewell to The Undertaker. If he comes out at the end of the show and he gives his speech and it truly feels like it's the end and he's kind of being real as Mark and there's shades of the dead man and shades of the American Badass in there and he does a nice little goodbye and the announcers are somber and everybody feels like this could truly be it, I would venture to guess, and I'd put my money on, that we hear the Fiend's his music, right? That's what I was trying to emulate in a very poor manner. But I really believe that's what we could hear, is the Fiend's music dropping as the Undertaker's about to say goodbye and attacks the Undertaker, leaving him in the ring with a mandible claw, very safe bump, because it's not even a bump. And I mean, hell, Ric Flair took it. So that's what I think is going to happen. It's going to really depend on the placement of when Undertaker's coming out, which will cue you to what's going to happen. So keep that in mind. If it truly is just the end and he comes out at the end and it's a feel good, good night moment, and the Undertaker leaves it all in the ring and leaves his hat like he symbolically has done out how many times now, then, you know, fine, it's fine too. But I would like to see that final send off that the Fiend, I think, could really benefit from, and one last contribution to younger talent that he could have in his final send off, win, lose, or draw, good match, bad match. He says that's it at WrestleMania 37. So I think that's what's going to happen. But tonight we're here to talk about not the future. We're here to talk about the past. We're here to talk about the Undertaker's top three moments ever, in my estimation. I know that these top threes, top fives, whatever you do, are always subjective. There's always controversy. There's always certainly some feedback and differing opinions. So keep that in mind. I'm sure that you'll say, you missed this, you missed that. How could you not say this? Well, it's three, right? So there's certainly a lot more I could have included. It's not easy to pick three out of 30 years. But these are what stick in my mind as the most impactful for his career, for his opponent's career, and for the business as a whole. So these are top three, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. But first, a shout out to Sean Harford, who is one of our near and dear patrons of the show, a regular listener of the show, and he will actually be joining me next week for Monday Night Raw review as we put a bow on Survivor Series and review the Monday Night Raw after Survivor Series. He'll be joining me again next Tuesday. So late Tuesday night, that'll drop in your feed as Sean and I review Monday Night Raw. So it's going to be a blast. And Sean, thank you so much. If you want to join him, you can do so at WWE Podcast on Patreon. So certainly much thanks to you, Sean, as we do appreciate your support here. And I'll be talking to you very soon. Okay. Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it is time to get into The Undertaker's top three moments, in my mind, that he ever had in his career. So sit back and relax. We're going to just dive into it right now with number three. That is The Undertaker returning as the American Badass at Judgment Day 2000. So we start off the top three with not even his dead man persona. Bet you didn't see that coming. But the reason I chose this, the reason that I chose this moment, is because it highlights The Undertaker's ability to evolve and survive and thrive in this business. He could have probably been fine as the dead man, But if you listen to him in his many documentaries that he's now doing, he felt stale, which means if he feels stale, that means the fans have been feeling stale for quite a while. And he even admits he probably could have done fine as the Dead Man, but I don't think he would have been as successful, seen the level of success that he did if he didn't evolve into something a little bit different. It wasn't 180 degrees, but he certainly was, it was like an alter ego of The Undertaker that at first took some getting used to, because we had seen The Undertaker for how many years as the Dead Man. So seeing him come out on a motorcycle, you're like, wait, what? I remember saying, like, wait, what? What do you mean he's on a motorcycle? Granted, he was still wearing the trench coat, which he noted was a link back to the old Undertaker. And, there had to be some kind of link. He couldn't just come out and pretend that he wasn't the Dead Man before. But it was striking. It was much different. He even had promos that were not 100, again, not a completely different promo, but much more Mark Calloway than Dead Man, Rest in Peace, that slow tone to his promos. It was much more just kind of a normal talking man. And he had many iterations of the American Badass. He had Big Evil, right? I remember that. He went from babyface to heel to babyface. And he eventually went back to the Dead Man. So he went back to the Dead Man in 2004. Excuse me, 2004, March 2004 at WrestleMania 20. So he nearly had 4 years as the American Badass. Nearly. And Vince, I guess, was not a big fan of it. He never really fell in love with that character. I think he always loved the Dead Man, and I think the reason is because that was his own creation. That was his, that was Vince, and it did come from Vince's mind. I mean, it really was Vince's pet project that was one of the most successful, if not the most successful, pro wrestling character ever to grace a television screen ever. I don't care what era, what promotion. I think I stand pretty steadily on that statement. But this moment, it was really significant because it also gave The Rock somebody else that he could ally with. And yeah, The Rock and Taker weren't a tag team, but the lack of babyfaces at that time was pretty, I mean, it was tough because you had Austin, who was gone. You had your top money drawing babyface gone, right? He was injured with his neck surgery. So with Undertaker coming back, positioning him as a babyface made total sense. And The Rock certainly needed help in that Iron Man match, which to the credit of Triple H and The Rock, that Iron Man match was really, really good. I mean, it was really good. Shawn Michaels as the special referee. It was one of the better Iron Man matches, true 60-minute Iron Man matches that you'll see. And well-booked. The only snafu in that whole thing, and I've done a whole nostalgia, actually, I believe, on this match itself, but is that the clock running out didn't make sense. Like, the timing on the screen was just wonky. I mean, they even just took it off the screen because they knew that the wrestlers in the ring weren't adhering to the exact time that things were supposed to happen. So they just took it off. But if you kept going, it would have been like, well, the match is over. So this disqualification that Undertaker caused, and which actually inadvertently caused Triple H to win that match and regain or retain the WWF championship, wouldn't have happened because the timer on the screen was off. But that's, I mean, I'm not ranting about that. It's just one of those little things. But I understand the difficulty of nailing that exact timing. It's not easy. But it also was really surprising the way the crowd reacted, because they were so excited to see Undertaker. But at first, you know, they were probably like, hey, what the hell is this? But you listen to the reaction, and there's only a moment of that, and the rest is just it's a massive pop. You know, people weren't silent and confused. I'm sure they had questions, but that link to the sunglass or the long trench coat was that link that's like, okay, this is Undertaker. He still had the long hair, but I guess we're doing the biker gang thing. So it was, I don't know, I just love that moment. He comes in, he whips the DX and punches Vince McMahon in the face, which is one of the funniest moments that Vince has ever had with Undertaker. I don't know why I find this moment so funny. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'll just briefly describe it for you. Undertaker gets in the ring, as you heard, and he clears house. He chokeslams X-Pac, Road Dogg, nearly chokeslams Stephanie McMahon. And then Vince McMahon enters the ring, and he turns Undertaker around and then immediately regrets it with this face and tries to walk away, turns around and gets punched in the face. It's the face Vince makes. I mean, so he was really, really good in the ring with facials and timing, not as a performer, as in terms of like, you know, putting on a great match, but he understood the psychology. That's what made Vince really, really good and made him a really good announcer. But again, that's my number three spot for The Undertaker, Judgment Day 2000, as he returns as the American Badass. So, by the way, guys, before I get to number two, if you want to give me your top three, send them to me. Send this to me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Interested to hear what your three top moments or top five moments are with The Undertaker. So certainly a lot of moments to sift through with 30 years of content. It's just absurd. So, all right. Well, that is number three. Here is my number two pick. That was, every time I see this, and I know I've done a couple of shows on this particular topic with The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, the original Hell in a Cell, Bad Blood, 97, October 5th. I mean, I know all the stats, sadly, just, I mean, all by heart. But it was such a huge moment for all involved. And I know I said at the beginning of the show that it wasn't just always about The Undertaker and advancing his career. It was also about the men in the ring that he was with. And in this case, both Shawn Michaels and obviously Kane massively, massively benefited from The Undertaker and this particular storyline. That's why this moment to me is number two. It is, to me, still the greatest Hell in a Cell match of all time. Not just because it was the first, but the story behind this was so good. So good. You talk about masterpiece storytelling that is non-existent in the 2020 wrestling product. It makes you just yearn for the days of old, right? When something like this comes along, you had Shawn Michaels inadvertently hit The Undertaker a couple of months before, and then they end up having a match that ended in a DQ or a countout. Then they went to Ground Zero, the pay-per-view before, and it was in a lumberjack match, and Shawn was able to escape. And then they finally went to the very first Hell in a Cell structured match, and it was the next logical step. You got to have something where Shawn can't escape, and he couldn't until, well, they obviously fought on top of the cell, but it was great storytelling. Undertaker legitimately at that point, I mean, of course I was, I mean, how old was I? 12, 13. And he legitimately scared me. But this, as I always say, and I know you're tired of hearing of it, but this match is what drew me into wrestling. And I, after this storyline, after I saw this match, after I saw everything unfold, it drew me in. I said, okay, I'm done. Like, no more Power Rangers or whatever the hell I was watching at the time. You know, and this is what did it for me. It was The Undertaker. It was Michaels. And by the way, I hope you caught the audio there of when Undertaker hit Shawn Michaels in the head with that chair. That may be the most flush, hard hit chair shots to the head I've ever seen or heard. I mean, there's been thousands of chair shots that I've seen in my life with watching wrestling. But this was, if you haven't seen it, it's brutal. I mean, like, he doesn't put his hands up. There's no protection. It is just a flat, perfect shot to the skull to Shawn Michaels in a bloody mess. And Kane obviously comes out. Paul Bearer for weeks had been telling Undertaker, your brother Kane is alive. He's coming. And he, lo and behold, he does. Paul Bearer shows up with Kane. And if you haven't seen, and I know it just came out a couple of days ago, but the Brothers of Destruction documentary, see it. They do a very good job, again, of breaking down the Brothers of Destruction. Kane, to me, is one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time, characters too, of all time. And I don't think he ever got a proper run in 98, 99 as champion. But when you have the likes of Stone Cold Steve Austin there drawing buku bucks for WWE, it probably didn't make sense to have Undertaker at or Kane on the top of the totem pole when you have Stone Cold Steve Austin killing it, absolutely killing it for WWE in terms of pay-per-view buys, ticket buys, everything else. So, but I absolutely loved this moment in WWE. I still watch it to this day. I'll watch that match, watch that moment, and it takes me back to a time when storytelling was simple, a time when you didn't have to think too hard, and there were no massive gaping holes of, wait, how did this happen? How did we get from here to here? You know, it just was simple. It was easy to understand. You had a brother that Undertaker thought was dead after he burned down a funeral home, and Undertaker stands there, looks into the eyes of Kane in one of the most iconic moments ever in terms of stare downs, and that was also covered on the documentary series, but it is true that that is one of the most iconic stare downs ever in wrestling of Kane's debut. Rips the door off and faces Undertaker one-on-one, tombstones him, and Michaels crawls out of a pool, literally a pool of his own blood, as Vince McMahon would go on to say, or I think it was Jerry the King Lawler who said that, and covers the Undertaker for the win. Shawn Michaels was better for it. He was bandaged up for weeks after that. And Undertaker obviously was then shotgunned into a program with Kane that led all the way to WrestleMania 14. So from October 5th through the end of March the following year, they had a story arc. Yeah, long-term booking did exist. We just have to resurrect it. I think there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think everyone is concerned about pleasing Vince and not the fans. And it's just a mess. I mean, you see, hear about plans and scripts being torn up the day of the show, the hour before the show. I mean, I do believe all of those, all those things. I do. But nonetheless, a hell of a moment, an amazing, amazing story, just one of the best matches I've ever seen in terms of psychology, and it is deserving of my number two spot. So that leads us to number one. What could possibly top this? What the hell could possibly top this moment of Kane's debut of the very first Hell in a Cell match? You have a all-star on the other side of the ring in Shawn Michaels. You get shot into one of the best storylines of all time with the Brothers of Destruction. What could possibly top this? Well, I have an answer for you right here.
Get the streak back! And again, the this classic is continuing. Can you believe, ladies and gentlemen, what we are witnessing here together tonight? The world is watching a classic.
So fitting for the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. The legendary Undertaker. The legendary Shawn Michaels.
This capacity crowd is chanting, this is awesome. They are right.
This was easily the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels' best match. And notice Shawn Michaels is in on my top two. You know, I was conflicted about the top moment, and I'll get into this in a minute, and I'll let you listen to some audio of the other top number one moment that I was very, very conflicted about sharing with you being my top one. So I'll get to that in a minute. But this match for Shawn and Undertaker is believed to be, by many, the greatest wrestling match of all time, the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. Being the greatest wrestling match of all time, that's a pretty damn tall task. I guess you have to name the pay-per-view as the greatest wrestling match of all time, and then it'll just be that, right? I guess there's a wink and a nod for you over this past summer with Edge and Orton, but this truly gave me goosebumps watching it live. I mean... You probably know where you were when you watched this. It's one of those where were you when type of things. It was the most believable, up to this point, the most believable ending of the Undertaker's streak that could have happened. And Shawn Michaels and Undertaker have always had amazing chemistry. But up until this point, they never really crossed paths one-on-one, even though Shawn Michaels had been back in WWE since 2002, you know, like they hadn't crossed paths other than the Royal Rumble the year before. They didn't cross paths until then. So it was just an amazing, amazing match. And Jim Ross just adds so much, as I always say. The man just makes everything feel so important and authentic and real, whereas Michael Cole's more worried about, you know, like the moments. This is like transparently saying, this is a WrestleMania. How fitting is it for 25th? Stop it. Like Jim Ross is concerned about what's in the ring. The rest of the stuff will tell its own story. It'll all play out. I don't need to have somebody tell me it's a moment. Don't do that. Then it takes me out of the moment. Kind of ironic, right? But Jim Ross, I mean, I can't say enough about him as far as his body of work, his contributions to the business, everything. And it's always also great to hear him in AEW as well. But this match for Undertaker, I remember just like, oh my God, Shawn Michaels hit it. It's over. But here's the key. When you hear an announcer say, that's it, it's over. I mean, like when Jerry the King Lawler did it, you go, okay, well, that's not it. Right? You just go, ah, shut up. You just want them for once, please. It's science that when an announcer says, that's it, we have a new champion, or that's it, this match is over, it's a 100% chance the match is not over. So please, I'm begging the announcers, for whatever reason, they just can't help themselves, and they think that it's going to have the audience listening buy in more that that's truly the end of the match, except anybody that's been watching wrestling for more than a couple of months knows, wait a minute, the announcers are just always wrong. They're constantly wrong. For the people that are in the business the most and having to dissect what's going on in the ring and know the stories that are going on, they sure are dumb, aren't they? And I don't mean that on a personal level. I'm talking about their characters as announcers. So it was, again, this match, as I'm sure you will agree. It may not be your top one, but it is on most people's lists of the greatest wrestling match and maybe greatest Undertaker moment of all time. But here's the other thing that I was conflicted about, and I'll play some audio. This to me, I almost went with it, so I guess I'll call it an honorable mention, but it certainly was the biggest, I guess it depends on the adjective you want to use, right? Like, is it the top moment? Is it the biggest moment? Is it the best moment? Or do all three of those things mean the same thing? I mean, so it depends on the verbiage you use, but this certainly, I think, maybe not the top moment in his career, but this was certainly the biggest.
All right, Brock Lesnar countered. Brock Lesnar countered. Lesnar countered. He's got Undertaker up in his shoulders again.
Not again.
Going for a triple. A third and five to the Undertaker. Brock Lesnar into the cover. Hooks the leg. The streak is over.
That was by far the biggest moment in his career. Still to this day, I can't believe they broke the streak. I mean, it's been, that was WrestleMania 30, we're coming up on 37, so 6.5 years. It's been 6.5 years, and I still, to this day, am baffled as to why they broke the streak. And the explanation from Vince, when Austin put him on the spot on his podcast, Vince said to Austin that, well, when you look at the locker room, who else has the credentials to potentially beat The Undertaker's streak? And nobody wants to give back to the business more than The Undertaker, more than Mark Calloway. Well, how did that fare for Brock Lesnar? I mean, he's not your full-time guy. He's not the guy that is going to be there that's going to build, they're going to build the company around. The guy is there every like 6 months to a year. And yeah, he's a huge name, household name, no question. But is he? He's not the future of WWE. So what are you doing? And I still don't agree with it. So we have a large enough sample size and a large enough amount of time has passed by that we can judge now whether it was a good decision or not. And the answer is no. The answer is still no. So that was a bad call by Vince. Bad call. I know he wanted to do, as he said in his own words, do something big at WrestleMania 30. But you already had something big at WrestleMania 30. That's called Daniel Bryan. Overcoming Triple H, overcoming Randy Orton and Batista. Basically overcoming Evolution minus Ric Flair to become the world champion. With the moment he had, that was big enough. We didn't need to have this. Undertaker even got injured during that match. And it was a wake-up call for him. As you watch the documentary, it goes over this in detail. But I think the biggest moment in his entire career. Biggest, yes. Best? Depends how you define best. I would say, no, it's not his best. It's not his brightest moment. But it certainly is the biggest. It's certainly the one that people still talk about today and will talk about forever. I always was of the belief that they should not... I said originally they should never break the streak. And then I said, well, if they're going to break the streak, it should be with somebody that the WWE is going to build around, that the company can build around, and it should be a massive heel that beats him. Well, it was a massive heel, except the guy that beat him that's a massive heel is not with the company regularly in any sense of the word. Why they couldn't have just had Roman Reigns a few years later be the one to break it, turn him heel there, to me that would have been the only decision, the best decision that they could have made. If you're going to break the streak, make it count with a guy that's actually you can build around for the foreseeable future. And turn the guy massively heel in an instant. And yes, Roman Reigns did get some of the best heat you'll ever hear. The Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania when they were like cussing at him for 15 minutes. It's some of the best things you'll ever hear. True emotion from fans. I think it could have been even hotter if that's possible. If he was the one to break the Undertaker's streak and not just be one of two guys that beat the Undertaker's streak, if he's the one that did it, it would have been, I think, even better, completely turning him heel. But instead, Brock Lesnar was the one that broke the seal, and now you have Roman Reigns as kind of the one that's like, oh yeah, well, I wasn't the one to break the streak, I just kind of added to his loss record. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think, not only of your top three, but what do you think also about the streak? Do you think the streak should have been broken? Is there even a case to be made today in 2020? Do you agree somehow, some way that, yes, it benefited Brock, it benefited the company, it benefited Taker, whoever. I want to hear a case for it. I'm interested. So, well, that kind of does it for my nostalgia show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It's always the most fun show of the week because you just get to put the current product aside and you get to just play in the sandbox of yesteryear And it is always a blast doing this. I am taking suggestions now for Wrestling Nostalgia starting next week, because Undertaker's, I guess, tribute on this show for Wrestling Nostalgia miniseries that we had is coming to a close with Survivor Series this Sunday. And you guys are more than welcome to send me ideas for my Wrestling Nostalgia show starting next week at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. That's the email. So also tomorrow, I will be dropping probably at the same time this show comes out, so you'll see probably both shows at once, the mailbag, WWE Podcast Mailbag Episode 3 coming your way, as you probably already see it on the feed, but just so you know, we are doing a complete show dedicated to your voicemails rather than interrupting you your listening experience with a bunch of them through our normal shows. So anyway, guys, a ton more content coming this week, including the Botch guy who will be joining me. He's on YouTube on Sunday night, immediately following the pay-per-view. We will be reviewing the show and giving our thoughts on it. So that'll be a late night for me, but fun for you, because as you wake up Monday morning, you get to hear what our thoughts right away. And it should be a very, very eventful show. Certainly no shortage of talking points. But if you haven't already checked him out on YouTube, the Botch guy, what are you doing? Go check him out. Subscribe. Really well done content. Funny, authentic, everything you look for in a YouTuber that is very watchable. And by the way, his channel's growing like insanely fast. So head on over there, jump on the bandwagon, and check him out on YouTube, the Botch guy. So alrighty. Well, that does it for me and for this episode of Wrestling Nostalgia. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.